Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Discount Supplements. Discount Supplements are Ireland's largest retailer of sports nutrition and health foods, and they've been helping their customers achieve their fitness goals over the last 12 years and are an Irish family-run business. Personally, I've been using Discount Supplements for years. So for those of you who've been following me since the very beginning on, say, Instagram or Facebook, these are the company that I always tag, particularly if you're in Ireland. They've got great prices, their products always arrive on time, and if you're lucky, sometimes you get a little bit of a freebie if you have an order of a certain amount or more. So I can't recommend them enough. If you need to pick up your sports supplements, they're my go-to place personally. So to pick them up or to check them out, head over to discountsupplements.ie and use their discount code BK2019 for 10% off for any podcast listeners. That's BK as in Brian Keane, 2019, for 10% off. That's discountsupplements.ie. Now on to today's episode. Okay, so going to create a separate introduction for this episode just because the way this one fell is a little bit weird. Is weird the right word? Inconvenient? Maybe not inconvenient. If you like the Q&A, it's probably really convenient. Anyways, the reason I'm doing a separate introduction to this episode is I recorded this at the start of last week. So before I experimented with the new question of the day format. So as of now, there's a few questions of the day that are 7, 8, 9 minute podcasts that are fleshing out questions that got sent in through my Instagram story Q&A. So this one I actually recorded before I answered any of those. So as of now, the feedback on those daily Q&As has been really, really good and people seem to be enjoying it. If you've let me know how you found it, good, bad or indifferent, thank you, and like, thank you for it. I've probably messaged back directly if I've seen it, but a massive thank you for that because it gives me guidance on how to put out the content to best serve you, because that's what this is about. If you're listening, it's about, well, how has the information that I have or the perspective I have or the opinion or experience I have, what and how can that improve your life in some meaningful way? So this is probably, as of now, I'm going to keep those daily Q&As for another week or two anyway to experiment with. So this may be the last fitness Q&A for a while in terms of long form, where it's not, you know, broken into a single episode. Because over the next month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, I have some incredible guests coming on the podcast. So they're going to be taking up the Monday and every second Thursday slot. And I have one episode that will probably go out next week on the top 11 lessons that I learned running through the Arctic and running through the Sahara. So that's another very heavy mindset episode, kind of similar to the 8 critical habits of building mental toughness episode. So very, very similar to that one, nearly a part two to that episode. So today is a fitness mindset Q&A that is probably going to be the last one in this format for a while, just because I've been breaking these questions into single episodes and posting them daily. And I know a lot of you enjoy that because you can go straight to the question you want. You can skip over it if it's not applicable, or if you've only got, you know, 6, 7, 8 minutes and you want something quick, fast and easy, you can listen to it. So just a separate introduction to let you know kind of the story and the crack with everything going forward, and any feedback, always amazing. What you like, what you love, what you hate, what you dislike, what you're indifferent to in terms of interviews, Q&As, solo episodes, the daily questions, let me know. As I said, like on previous podcasts, I'm not so emotionally attached to anything that I do. I base it all off feedback on how can I best provide the most value to you listening. So any feedback on that would be awesome. So without further ado, enjoy today's fitness Q&A. 9 questions all over the place, either on fitness or mindset. So I think I'm going to title this one Fitness Mindset Q&A. So I hope you enjoy. Catch you all real soon. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is a kind of off-the-cuff random Q&A because this isn't the first time this has happened. If you've listened to the podcast in the past, There's times when I've drank too much coffee and I can't focus on the task I'm supposed to be doing and kind of feel the need to talk or to create something that's not writing and sitting in front of a laptop. So that's one of these days. It's happened again. So more fool me. I shouldn't be drinking this much coffee on a, which is now a Tuesday morning. I shouldn't be drinking this much coffee because I'm supposed to be writing the second draft for my third book, working title, The Life Mindset. Even though I'm jumping between The Life Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, it's going to be something along those lines anyway. I'm working on the first draft. I'm about halfway through the second draft. I did an hour this morning before I trained going through that, and I'm hoping to have that entire draft done in the next week or two, and fingers crossed that book will be ready to come out by the end of the year. As of now, it is very heavy on the mindset side of things. Goal setting, self-sabotage, dealing with self-doubt, building confidence. A lot of the things I'll be covering actually at my upcoming Rewire Your Mindset seminar. So I've used the principles in the book to design the content for that particular seminar, and they're gonna go hand in hand with one another. But yeah, so anyways, I can't write and focus on the screen, so now I'm recording a podcast instead. So a load of questions came in today through my Instagram Q&A. I do a daily Monday to Friday Q&A, 10 question Q&A on my Instagram stories. So if you're not on my Instagram or subscribe to my Instagram stories, you can click the little bar thing in the top right hand of my Instagram page and it'll make sure that you see my stories. And I normally put, before I train in the morning, I train around 6 a.m. I normally put up a question box and you can send in any questions you have and I just pick them at random. So some of these I've taken from that, and I'm going to jump straight in. They're kind of all over the place, a little bit of everything. So I think I'm probably just going to title this episode like the fitness / mindset Q&A or something along those lines. But yeah, hope you enjoy it and we'll jump straight in. So first question, what are your top supplements for health? So I have a couple of my personal preferences, and to be honest, if you've listened to the podcast in the past, you already know what I'm going to preface this with, that the best supplements to take are the ones that aren't getting in your nutrition. So for example, if you don't eat a lot of red meat or you don't eat a lot of pumpkin seeds, it may be worth considering adding in, say, a zinc supplement, because you're probably going to be deficient in zinc. And the best supplements you can take are the ones that fill in the gaps that you're missing in your nutrition. The reason supplements work so well is because they allow you to literally fill in whatever requirement you need because you're not getting it from that food. So if you don't eat any fruit or vegetables and you're not getting a lot of micronutrients, it's worth considering with supplementing with, say, like a green shake or something along those lines. However, there's a couple of best practices that I'm going to talk about that will benefit most people that are worth considering. But just to preface, the best supplements are the ones that reverse engineer your nutrition and your diet. So anytime I used to work with people on nutritional plans, the supplements would be based around the goal. So reverse engineering the goal, there's certain supplements that would be better for muscle building and fat loss, like creatine, beta-alanine, you know, caffeine, green tea extract, etc. And the same kind of applies for health. So prefacing, main supplement is going to be the one that you're deficient in. That's always going to be the one that gives you the most benefit. But when it comes to supplements for health, there's a couple of different angles. And also, health is a little bit subjective. So in this term, I'm going to narrow it down a little bit and do a little bit of perception tuning on this one, where I assume health, you mean better energy levels, good feeling, general feeling of well-being, good sleep, good training sessions where you're not devoid of energy during those workouts. So that's kind of how I'm going to constitute health in the description for this answer. So the first thing I would look at is a probiotic. So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I'm a huge fan of an extra strength probiotic. I use the Udo's Choice Super 8 Gold. It's the best probiotic I've ever used. It's absolutely incredible. And if you don't have good health, you're going to miss a lot of tricks with even body composition and energy level increase, because it's about the food that you eat is important, but the food you eat and absorb is probably more important. So you can be eating loads of food, but if there's a problem with your gut and you're not absorbing those nutrients as efficiently as you would be had your gut health been at 100%, you're probably going to lose a trick in terms of losing body fat faster, or say building muscle, or just improving your overall energy levels. So the number one supplement I always come back to when it comes to health is a probiotic, because of all, like, there's a lot of recent studies coming out about the gut being the second brain. And I spoke about this in the podcast with Orla Walsh, dietitian Orla Walsh, about IBS and gut health, that there's a good reason that we call the gut the second brain, because of all the serotonin production in terms of happy hormones, some of the new recent studies that are linked to depressive disorders that are down to an irregulation in gut health. And there's a lot of issues going on right now because of the food that we're eating in the most part, not in all cases, but particularly highly processed food. It's readily available, it's cheap, but it's also devoid of nutrients and is putting our body under quite a lot of strain, and our gut under quite a lot of strain, trying to digest certain processed ingredients in some of the foods that we're eating. So putting back in the probiotic, or if you've been on an antibiotic where you've been on a medicine, or you've been, you know, given an antibiotic, you're going to kill off a lot of that good bacteria in your stomach, and putting a probiotic back in is going to replace a lot of that good bacteria, so it's going to improve your digestion. So that's number one. The second one is probably magnesium. And the reason I say magnesium is because most people in the Western world are deficient in magnesium for a couple of reasons. If you have a high intake of sugar, you're going to pull out a lot of that magnesium out of your body. And a lot of the foods that we eat now are not as magnesium rich as they were 50, 60 years ago. So a lot of foods that we eat tend to not have the same nutrient density that they had, you know, several years ago, you know, even in your parents' generation or your grandparents' generation. So magnesium is one that a lot of people are deficient in. You can kind of tell if you're deficient in magnesium, because the side effects of deficiency are quite obvious and they're quite pronounced. One is really bad sugar cravings. So if you have really bad chocolate or sugar cravings, there's a sign that you're potentially magnesium deficient. There's other things that go on there in terms of blood sugar balance, etc. But there's also a chance that you may be magnesium deficient. Ironically, raw cacao is loaded with magnesium, and chocolate cacao is loaded with magnesium, but because of it being mixed with milk and increased levels of sugar in chocolate, it more or less negates all the effect of the magnesium in that food because of the sugar pulling the magnesium out of your body. So adding that back in can help. Random stress is also a sign of magnesium deficiency in some people. This is where it kind of caught me, where I would just feel randomly stressed, like for no other reason than I just didn't really feel right. And when I added in magnesium, I would just calm down. It also relaxes and works as a central nervous system relaxant. Like, it'll relax your central nervous system slightly, so you won't feel as like fight or flighty. And when I added it in, I just felt really, really calm. And it also helped my sleep. So I take magnesium. I can't remember the brand's name. It's MAG365, it's called. It's in a green tub. I take that every night before bed, and it works really, really well. That's probably the second supplement. And then the third one that I'm hesitant to talk about, but because I've got such an incredible benefit from it, I'm going to mention it here. And that's CBD oil. So this is one that I'm hesitant for a reason. One, I'm not an expert in CBD oil, and I understand the cannabinoids and the hundreds of cannabinoids that there's available, but CBD being the non-psychoactive of what's in, say, hemp, I'm not an expert in this area, and I need to do a lot more research into it. But from the studies that I read, and I've been about 6 months researching CBD oil because of all the people that I follow and people that I've either connected with on the podcast, either live or off air, who've recommended CBD oil to me for some way, shape or form, or for some reason or another, particularly to do with sleep. So a lot of people use it for anti-inflammatory properties, arthritis, even some of the research is coming back on epilepsy. I can't speak to those, but I can speak to its improvement on sleep quality. And it's probably, and I am hesitant to say this because I've only been using it for about 3 months, but it's the best new supplement I've used for as long as I can remember, probably since I added in the Super 8 Gold probiotic a couple of years ago. I started with the Super 8 and then they brought out the Gold and I switched. It's probably the best supplement that I've used since then. And mainly because of its effect on mood. And what happens with CBD oil is non-psychoactive, so you don't get high with it. Say THC is the active compound in marijuana, CBD is the non-active compound, the non-psychoactive compound. But what it does do is it makes you feel really calm and you just kind of feel kind of chilled out. So if you think about how you feel after a workout or after you've meditated, if you meditate, or after you do yoga, it's kind of what CBD oil does. It just kind of makes you feel a lot calmer and it massively improves sleep quality. That's the biggest difference I found. So I use a brand from Hemp Heroes and I use their extra strength one, 10 drops under my tongue about 2 hours before bed. I'm probably going to do a full blog post or podcast on this at some stage, but that's how I've been taking it. And I'm hesitant to completely recommend it to everybody because of some of the stigma that's attached to it. I think a lot of it's completely unjust, and in 2, 3, 4 years, that will be all but gone. But from personal experience, it's an incredible supplement. I highly recommend the brand Hemp Heroes as well. I can't speak for any other brand. That's the one that I use, and it works incredibly well. So if you want to look into it, the extra strength one, I take 10 drops under my tongue about 2 hours before bed, and that tends to work really well because of all the impact on sleep. When your sleep is good, your overall mood is better, your energy levels are increased, your insulin sensitivity is going to be heightened, your insulin resistance is going to be lowered, you're just going to feel better. So that's why I like it so much. I also like the calming effect that it has. So they're probably my top three supplements for health right now, probiotic, magnesium, and probably CBD oil. Okay, next question. Any tips for how to stop thinking about my ex? I have a new girl, but can't stop thinking about my ex-girlfriend. So, to preface this one, I'm not a relationship expert, but I can probably offer a decent perspective on this situation because it's really common and I've seen it in people in my own life personally, and I've experienced it slightly myself in the Phantom X thought process, where you kind of hit your upper limit on a relationship and you start to self-sabotage slightly by building up your previous partner, what they call a Phantom X in the Phantom X-E-X. There's a book by, I think it's Edwin Levine, and it's called Attached, and he speaks about the phantom girlfriend or phantom boyfriend, that when you kind of start to hit your upper limit in a relationship and you get to the point where you're not feeling super confident about going any further, and we all have upper limits in certain areas of our life. We have self-created limitations. For some of us, it's in relationships. For some of us, it's in fitness. For some of us, it's in job, in our job or personal life. We all have upper limits, and breaking through those upper limits is on the other side tends to be a lot of personal growth. But understanding that when you're thinking about your ex-girlfriend, you have to look at it from an entirely wide angle view and perspective, because what happens when we think about isolated incidents or isolated situations with, say, an ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend, is we tend to only think about the good times and we tend to brighten those. So if you picture it like a movie in your mind, you tend to like ramp up the brightness on that, and that's all you can kind of focus on. And you don't realize and don't give enough weight to the fact that they're an ex for a reason, and they're an ex because either you didn't get on, you had different life paths, for some reason it didn't work out, because if it was working out, they wouldn't be your ex, they'd still be your partner. And when you give too much of a distributed weight to all the good things that happen, it makes you focus on something that you think you possibly missed out on, and you build up this phantom ex image in your head where you're like, oh, they were so much better, or they were so great, or whatever it is, or they're better, and you start comparing them directly to the person you're seeing now. And this is really, really common, and I've done it myself, and reading that book Attached really helped me. There's another book called The Big Leap, which talks about that upper limit. I didn't like it as much, but that concept of the upper limit allowed me to kind of attach and connect the ideas from those two books and overlap them, and hopefully it's providing value in this answer. And when you realize that you broke up for a reason, and you start to give a little bit more weight to that reason, and if that hasn't changed and those circumstances haven't changed, then you're wasting time and energy focusing on something that was probably never going to work out in the first place. And I've spoken in the podcast in the past about what you focus on is what's going to expand. And if you focus on all the positive things from your ex-girlfriend or ex-boyfriend, that's what's going to expand in your mind, and you're going to end up building them up in your head. And the reverse goes for if you focus on the things of why the relationship ended, then you're going to be like, oh, actually, that relationship was probably never going to work out. Particularly if the reason that you broke up is still completely evident in the sense that nothing has changed. Like you were on different life paths, you were always fighting, there was jealousy on one or both sides. If the reason for the breakup is still there, then there's no reason to even be considering about going back with your ex. But it is worth noting that when you're in a relationship now, and as I said, I'm not a relationship expert, but I probably have enough perspective and possibly life experience, particularly in this area, that I can offer a different vantage point that may support you. And realize that sometimes when you hit that upper limit, and the same exact thing happens to people in their job, the same exact thing happens to people in their fitness, where they start to self-sabotage themselves, when you realize that the grass isn't greener on the other side, that the grass is green on the side that you look after, you start to give more energy and focus to the things that are important right now. You also have to ask yourself, are you masking and making up a story around your ex-girlfriend because you're not happy with your current girlfriend or current boyfriend, as the case may be? And that's a different question completely, because if you haven't hit an upper limit and you're just unhappy in the current relationship, then you're going to approach it from a different angle. And I'm a big believer in ladder up against the right wall, that not to get stuck in the sunk cost fallacy of a relationship or a job or a fitness program that you're on. Sunk cost fallacy meaning that, well, I've put in so much time or money or energy into this thing, I need to keep going with it. It's like, if it's a bad choice and a bad decision now, it doesn't change just because you put more effort and energy into it. That's literally climbing the ladder against the wrong wall. And if you're in a relationship now with whoever it is and you don't see it going anywhere, and you're like, okay, well, I put, you know, 2 years into this relationship, or I put 5 years into this relationship, or I put so much energy or money into this relationship, we've gone on holidays, we bought a house or whatever it is, and you're fucking miserable in that relationship, then it's time to start fresh in the sense of reset everything that's happened and ask yourself, what would I do right now if none of that was a factor? What would I do right now if I hadn't invested all this time or money into it? What would I do right now if I hadn't invested all my energies into this for the last 2 or 3 years? What decision would you make? And if the answer is, well, fuck, I wouldn't even be in this relationship, then that's your answer. You know what to do going forward. And I'm not saying that to break up with your girlfriend, your current girlfriend. I'm just offering it to try and provide value for anybody that's in a similar situation or has done it in other areas of their life. It's how I made the decision to quit teaching. When I was working full-time as a primary school teacher, I didn't leave it for about 2 years. I worked full-time for 4 years as a teacher, but for about two of those years, I was constantly being like, oh, well, I spent 5 years in college, got an undergraduate and then got a postgraduate. I spent all this money getting qualified. I spent all this energy studying and then getting a job and teaching. You know, I can't waste all this time that I did. That's a sunk cost fallacy. When I started to realize that, okay, if none of that had happened, if I hadn't put any time or any energy or any money into it, what decision would I make? And my decision was, well, I would work in fitness. I would go down a different career path and do something else. And that's how I made the decision off the back of it. So there's a couple of things there. Make sure that you're not hitting your own upper limit and that you're just creating a story to try and make yourself feel better. Make sure that you're not focusing on the wrong things, because whatever you focus on is what's going to expand. And then make sure that it's not a sunk cost fallacy, that you're not getting sucked into, I've spent so much time, energy and money on this thing, I need to keep going. If the wrong decision is the wrong decision, and if you're going in the wrong direction or your ladder's up against the wrong wall, it's against the wrong wall. And going harder or going faster just gets you to the wrong place quicker. So just be very, very aware of that, and hopefully that helps. Next question, training related. Do you keep a training diary? If so, what do you track? Sleep, weights, food, etc. I don't keep any training, sleep, or food diary now, but also, I've been training probably about 18 years now seriously for about 11 or 12 years, very consistently, 4, 5, 6 days a week. And I did track everything when I started. And I'm a big believer in tracking things at the beginning, because when you're trying to set a new goal or a new target or create new habits, it's really important that you're actually tracking what you're doing so you know if you're improving or not. And this very much depends on where you're at. When I'm setting a new goal for myself, something completely new, so in business or in life related, I will track it. And, you know, I have things that I've mentioned on other podcasts, like my gratitude journals, my, you know, gratitude anchors. I write my affirmations of the goals that I'm trying to achieve. I track those things in my personal life and business life because they're still relatively new in the grander scheme of things. I've only been running a business for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, 5, 6 years total in terms of full-time doing it. But things like training I've been doing for 17, 18 years. It's very automatic now. And I spoke about in my first book, The Fitness Mindset, about making your nutrition on automatic, making the right automatic choice. That when you get to a certain point where you've let the compound effect kick in and you've created the right daily habits about whatever it, around whatever it is you're trying to achieve, it nearly becomes automatic and you don't think about it anymore. But until you get to that point, it is 100% worth tracking whatever it is that's important to you. So if you're trying to get stronger, it makes sense that you track the weight that you're lifting week on week. If you're trying to improve your sleep quality, it makes sense that you track how well you're sleeping in each night and you make note of the changes. So what supplements have you added in? What nighttime routines have you tested? What sleep apps are you using? And see if they're actually making a difference. And if you don't track that, you're not going to know. And there's an old adage that what gets measured gets managed. And that's very much the case on whatever it is you're trying to improve on. Your food's exactly the same. I'm not a massive fan of things like MyFitnessPal and calorie trackers, but if you have no idea what 150 grams of, if you have no idea what 50 grams of carbohydrates looks like in the form of rice or sweet potato, then yes, 100% use a weighing scale and a fitness app to track your calories so that you can get an idea of what you're consuming. Just because I don't use it now doesn't mean that that's not what people should do. You should always reverse engineer whatever you're trying to achieve off the back of your starting point. One of the things that I struggle to offer on things like Instagram stories is when somebody asks me about my training and they'll say, you know, do you squat? Or do you deadlift? Or do you bench press? Or whatever training question I get asked. That's not necessarily the right question. Yeah, it's the perfect question if you're just curious about what I do. But if you're asking it for the reason that you're trying to find information that's going to support you on your journey, a better question is, what were you doing when you were at my stage? So I don't deadlift now because it's a movement pattern that just doesn't support me, but I deadlifted loads when I started off and it gave me a very strong base and a foundational core that allowed me to build muscle and build strength further down the line years later. Just because I don't say deadlift anymore, and personally I'm not a fan from my body type after having trained for so many years, but I love that move for most people. It's an incredible compound lift, and if you're starting off, it's definitely one of the foundation movement patterns to be doing in order to build strength and build size. So my advice for keeping a training diary is very much dependent on where you're at. Any area of your life that you're trying to improve, track it. If you're trying to improve your personal life, track that. If you're trying to improve your training quality, track that. If you're trying to improve and reduce your body fat or build muscle, track your nutrition, because what gets measured gets managed. Next question, can you give advice on how to decide what goals to focus on? So there's a couple of different ways to approach this one. Generally, the two angles I would come at is whatever the primary focus is now, whatever is the most important thing to you in your life right now, I would put a high priority on that and channel all your energy to it. I did a great podcast with Tom Otten recently. It was actually on his first podcast episode. He talked about this, where to get macro balance in your life, you have to become microly imbalanced at times. So that means that if you're trying to get your business off the ground, you're probably going to suffer in other areas of your life, your personal life, romantic life, even your fitness life, to try and get that business off the ground. But over time and in the grander scheme, in 3, 4, 5 years, when you're happier and you've got things up and running, you're going to have macro balance, even though for a 6-12 month period, you're very microly imbalanced. And that same thing happens to me when I'm training for an event. I spoke about this recently. What did I speak about this on? Oh, I spoke about this recently in the Rewire Your Mindset podcast episode, that the bonus episode that I did, where at times when I was training for the Arctic, other things would go to the back burner. So things like interviews, appearances, meeting friends for coffee, just because I wasn't able to prioritize that because I had to get the training in to allow me to run 230 kilometers through the Arctic. Like, the downside of that was, if I don't train and I'm not in a fit state, I could die in the Arctic and then I can't fucking help anybody. So that was kind of the case of micro imbalance for macro balance. But when it comes to setting goals, I like to break it into the four quadrants. So if you listen to that Rewire Your Mindset bonus podcast, which is speaking about my upcoming seminar in Dublin, I spoke about the four quadrants. So this is the kind of core concept of my new book that'll be out late this year, that I break my life into four quadrants: health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. And what I generally do, and what I'll be doing at the seminar, is getting people to set a goal in each of those four quadrants. The reason I do that is because it's very easy to set goals and focus on the thing that you want to do, as opposed to the thing that you need to do. So for example, if you're a fitness person and you love to work out, it's probably not that difficult for you to set a fitness goal and get to the gym every day. But if you're trying to get your personal training business off the ground, you need to be prioritizing what you focus on in your business in order to help and serve more people. And that can be more difficult. We all have an Achilles heel, a quadrant that we're not particularly good at. Some of us aren't good at, you know, three of them. Some of us are really good at one or two. It really varies person to person. So for example, I use myself in the seminar and the same in my upcoming book, that health was never really a massive struggle. There was times my mental health wouldn't be very good, but physical health, I was pretty good and consistent with training on for the most part. With the exception of the couple of years competing in bodybuilding, I was always pretty good in that point. I loved training. I like working out. I like eating healthy and the way it makes me feel. It was never that much of a struggle. Wealth, on the other hand, would go up and down. That was really poor in my early 20s just because I had a very poor financial blueprint, in the sense that every time I would have my financial thermometer where I would hit a certain income level, I would feel like it was burning a hole in my pocket and I'd have to spend it. So I had to rewire my financial blueprint. That's significantly better now. Things like love were always the area I had to work on. Personal relationships, romantic relationships, familial relationships. My daughter Holly being born 4 years ago really helped me with that, because it allowed me to switch priority and focus, and just it made me a better person in general because I had to start asking better questions of myself. And then the last one was fulfillment, which was at a very, very low point for my early 20s. Even when I was teaching and working with kids, and you're having impact as a teacher, I didn't feel that fulfilled. Even though I enjoyed my job, it didn't fill me up inside. Whereas that fulfillment is at like a 9 or a 10 on a daily basis now, because of podcasts, because of books that I write, because of appearances that I do, and getting to work with the people that I work with. So I like to set a goal in each one of those four. So right now, to give you an idea, My goal right now for my health is training for an Ironman, getting my body conditioned and ready to be able to swim, cycle, and run an Ironman distance triathlon. My wealth is very much trying to hit my end target goal for my LLC, my company, and my personal target in terms of where I invest financially to try and improve, particularly back in passive income strategies that I use. I'm not going to get into that now because I'm not a financial advisor. Love then is building and cultivating my personal relationships with my daughter, with my mom, with my inner circle. And that's just a continuous basis of focusing on the process, making sure I meet my mom nearly every day for coffee, making sure I get to do my weekly daddy-daughter days with my daughter, making sure that I meet my inner circle for lunch or coffee at least once or twice a week. That's my love quadrant. And then my fulfillment is the third book, really. Right now, because of the way that book is teeing up, that is going to be kind of my main thing that I think is going to support and help people. And as much as I love the podcast, and I absolutely freaking love the podcast, it's my favorite thing that I do, I think this third book is going to be bigger than that. I'm very fortunate the podcast gets, 90 to 100,000 downloads a month. I think the book's going to be bigger because there's so much in it that I've used off feedback from people on how to serve and help and the problems that people have. It's going to serve as a reference point that people can come back to regularly. So right now, my fulfillment goal is getting that book to have as much impact as it can. So I have a personal preference when setting goals of using the four quadrants and setting a goal in each one. At my upcoming seminar, I'll be doing that, where you leave with a focus goal in each of those quadrants. And then again, some will be more important. You may not be worried about money at all, but you're trying to get your body fat down. Or you may not be worried about, you know, your body fat or how much muscle you have, but you really want a romantic relationship, or you really want to be a better mother or father. Prioritizing whatever is important to you, and then putting the action steps in place to reverse engineer whatever it is you're trying to achieve. That's the success metric for what to focus on. What's the end goal? And then what are the action steps every day that I need to take that move me slightly closer to that goal? Focusing on things like your perfect day. When you get your day right and making sure that your daily actions are mapping to your end ambition, that's how you hit a big goal. It's not about just focusing on the big goal and the end goal, because you can get paralyzed by analysis by paralysis, where you're overthinking or overwhelmed by the thought of a big goal. You break it down into small, manageable, sizable chunks, and you focus on getting the day right. Has today, or the actions that I've taken today, moved me slightly closer to that end goal? If you're trying to lose, you know, 3 stone, or you're trying to build 5 kilos of muscle, has my actions today helped me get one step closer to that goal? Have I eaten the meals that are going to support me with weight loss? Have I done the training sessions that are going to support me with muscle building? Have I done the recovery and focused on my sleep so that my cortisol levels are low and that my energy levels are high, so I can give it all in tomorrow's workout? They're the questions to ask yourself, because when you start doing that consistently over time, that's how you get extraordinary results. You don't get and hit a massive target all in one go. It doesn't happen overnight. It's ordinary things done consistently well that lead to extraordinary results, and it's just focusing on that, prioritizing that, and then that's how you hit any end goal and whatever it is that you're trying to focus on. So next question, is it possible to gain 5 kilos of muscle in 6 months? Yes and no. Because the truth is, you can gain 5 kilos of muscle in 6 months, but it's probably unlikely, but it depends on your starting point. In fitness, and this is very well known in the bodybuilding community, where there's a phrase that's called beginner gains. It's all that muscle you put on your first 6 months of training. So you start eating right for the first time ever in your life, and you start lifting weight that's heavier than you've ever lifted, and you get all these muscular gains in the 6 month period. It's labeled as beginner gains. So yeah, it's 100% possible, particularly if you have genetics that allow you to pack on muscle quite easily. However, it's significantly more difficult the longer that you've been training. And the reason I say that is building muscle is quite a long process. There's quite a lot going on from a physiological standpoint. There's quite a lot of stimulus that you need to apply consistently over time that's going to create enough micro trauma and micro tears in the muscle, and then repairing it back with the food, amino acid, and calories that are going to allow that muscle to grow back bigger and stronger. But that gets harder and harder the longer you've been training, because you lose those beginner gains. So, for example, about six years ago, I was about 80 kilos and I was pretty lean and muscular, 80 kilos. And I set the goal that I wanted to be at about 85 kilos. And I walk around now about 85, 86 kilos. And it took me 5 years to build 5 kilos of muscle. So just to give you an idea, but I had also been training for about 12 years up to this point. So that's about 1 kilo of clean, lean muscle every year, which doesn't sound like a lot, but try adding a kilo bag of sugar to your body, you know, or adding 5 kilo bags of sugar to your body, and that's completely lean, dense muscle. That is going to look very different to adding, say, 5 kilos of fat, because you can add 5 kilos of fat very easily. You just ramp up your calories until you're in a huge surplus and it spills over and you've got enough body fat that you can increase 5 kilos. Also, you can increase 5 kilos by increasing things like carbohydrate, increasing water, because the amount of weight that's in water, and increasing things like sodium and salt so that you retain more water, and that can increase weight on a scale. But 5 kilograms of muscle, or 10 pounds of muscle, is quite a lot. So Is it possible to gain 5 kilos of muscle in 6 months? Yeah, 100%. You also may have unbelievable genetics where you've got polymorphisms in your genes or just a genetic makeup to allow you to pack on a serious amount of muscle. People of like black heritage, African-American, African heritage tend to pack on and have more muscle density in terms of their ability to pack on muscle. And so genetics come into play. Your actual where you're from is going to come into play. Your race is going to come into play. There's a lot of different things that come into play when packing on 5 kilos of muscle in a 6, 12, 18 month period. But just be aware that it's unlikely, particularly the longer you've been training. You're probably not going to take a magic bullet supplement or a training program or nutritional plan that allows you to pack on 5 kilos in 6 months. But if you're at the very, very start of your journey and you're quite skinny to begin with and you've got a good genetic makeup for building muscle, it's very, very possible that you'll build 5 kilos in 6 months or put on 5 kilos of muscle in 6 months and possibly even more. Outside of that, it's very unlikely, but not impossible. Okay, next question. Tips for asking out a girl you like at work. So I think this one's interchangeable with guy or girl. The truth is, when making any decision, and I do this in my personal life, I do this in my romantic life, I do this in my business life, I generally ask 3 questions. What's the upside to what I'm about to do? What's the downside to what I'm about to do? And can I handle the downside? And I think to approach any situation like that is going to kind of give you a good wide angle view on what you should do next. The truth is, it very much depends on the context. If you like a girl at work or you like a guy at work, there's an old adage that you shouldn't shit what you eat, which is very, very applicable in most cases. And as someone that worked in the nightclub scene and worked in the bar scene, I can attest to that is not a good idea. You should not shit what you eat for several reasons. And anyone that's been in a familiar situation will be like, yeah, I've fucking been there, shouldn't have done that. And it depends on the context, because if you just fancy a guy or girl at work just because you think they're hot or you think they're sexy, the upside to that, you know, some moments of pleasure, potentially a weekly or monthly fling, may not outweigh the downside, which is, you know, social awkwardness at work, you know, rumors being spread about you or about the relationship. And there's a lot of downside that could potentially come off the back of that. And then you have to ask yourself, well, if there's rumors spread about me, if it doesn't work out, or if there's that social awkwardness, is that worth the trade-off of, you know, banging a work colleague 3 or 4 times? That may not be worth the trade-off. However, if you're working with somebody and you're like, yeah, this could really go somewhere, this could be a potential girlfriend or boyfriend, somebody that I could see myself with for the next, you know, 6 months, a year, possibly more, depending on your age, or somebody I could potentially spend the rest of my life with, depending on where your life circumstance is, that upside probably outweighs the downside. And then again, it comes back to, can you handle the downside, which is probably the same, you know, social awkwardness, rumors being spread, if you're friends with that person, potential damaging of that friendship, a lot of other issues that come into play. But I would ask myself those questions. I'll keep this one quite short. Is if there's someone you like, a guy or a girl at work, at college, in school, wherever you are, wherever you're listening to this, or somebody in your gym, whatever it is, if there's somebody like that, ask yourself the upside and the downside. You know, I did a very popular podcast last year, actually it was maybe 18 months ago now, on hooking up with girls way out of your league. And it's the most clickbaity fucking podcast ever, or clickbaity title ever. But that was the whole principle. It wasn't really about hooking up with guys or girls way out of your league. And well, it was, I suppose. But the concept was asking yourself the upside and the downside and then handling the downside. It's weighing up the pros and cons of any given situation and then making a decision based off having all the information and then what you want it is you want to do and what action steps you want to take next. And that's how I would approach this situation. A guy or a girl that you like and you want to ask out, ask yourself the upside. What's the downside? Can you handle the downside? And then make your decision based out of that. Next question. Should I give up fizzy drink, diet drinks, Coke Zero, etc.? I have at least one a day. So I spoke about this on a recent podcast early in the new year with Scott Babty. And the reason I loved bringing this up was me and Scott have kind of different opinions on this. He's a big believer in diet drinks and I'm not a massive fan. However, the reason I love having that conversation with him is because he holds the opposite opinion. I love talking with people who hold opposite opinions to me because normally it offers me a fresh perspective on either a narrow-minded approach I've taken to something, or just gives me new information that allows me to serve and help people better, which I'm going to try and do now. The truth is, it depends on the person. There's no one-size-fits-all when it comes to diet drinks. Some people drink them and will get a negative response. The sweeteners, if you're on the autoimmune spectrum, you know, where you have IBS or some issues with your gut or with your stomach, some people will have a, you know, mimicking insulin feedback loop where they'll drink a diet drink during the day and then they'll get really bad sugar cravings later on in the day. That can happen to some people. And then there's a portion of the population that have zero negative effects when they drink diet drinks. So it's not a case of yes or no when it comes to Diet Coke or 7-Up Free or whatever it is, whatever drink you're drinking that's sugar-free. In the sense that if you're comparing it to the full sugar version, I tend to prefer the sugar-free version just because sugar tends to have a whole host of problems. Now, there is studies to show that maybe some of the artificial sweeteners in diet drinks are going to potentially have as much of a harmful impact over time, but they haven't been around long enough to do those studies. So sometimes a lack of information isn't the same as, you know, a study that's been disproven, but we're not going to know that answer. The sweeteners and artificial sweeteners are so new, those studies haven't been done. They just haven't. They haven't been around long enough for a 100-year study on how diet drinks are going to affect, you know, humankind and how it affects the body in different people. So what I would ask is, are the diet drinks you're consuming helping you hit your end goal? If you're trying to lose body fat and you have your diet pretty dialed in, you're in a calorie deficit, you're eating mostly quality, high nutrient dense foods for the most part, and you have a diet drink, a Coke Zero every day, and that sweetness and taste is the thing you look forward to and keeps you on track with your nutrition, then I say have at it. It's probably a good idea to keep that diet drink in your nutritional protocol. If you're concerned about health and the lack of evidence on the long-term effects of diet drinks is something that worries you, then stick to water. You know, that I would fall on that side of things personally. Even though I love diet drinks, I don't like that I get addicted to them, and I get really, really addicted to things. Like, I was a full-on Diet Coke addict when I lived in the States. I remember coming off it, I got really bad withdrawals, really bad headaches. A lot of it was to do with the caffeine, but potentially some of the artificial sweeteners weren't agreeing with me either. And the rain. I don't know if you can hear the rain in the background. It's like lashing against my window. Hailstones. So whether you should give up fizzy drinks or not, or fizzy diet drinks, depends on your end goal. If you're worried about it from a health standpoint, and it's asking yourself, what are you drinking it in comparison to? If you're drinking Coke Zero as opposed to full sugar Coke, yeah, it's probably better. If you're drinking Coke Zero instead of water, then water is probably going to be better for you. So a lot of factors that come into play. But again, like everything, when it comes to diet drinks, when it comes to certain foods, when it comes to protein bars, when it comes to supplements, what's the end goal? What body composition or performance are you trying to achieve? And is what you're doing mapping to that end ambition? If your fizzy diet drinks are the thing that's keeping you on track with your goal, then keep them. If it's not, then cut them. Okay, next question. How do you mentally deal with a long-term injury that stops you training the way you love? So I think this is something that everybody that's trained for more than a year or 18 months has experienced at some stage. Injuries are kind of just a part of training or a part of sport. Either gym-based injuries, sport-based injuries, or just like walking down the street and twisting your ankle. And understanding that injury is not an excuse not to train. And it depends on the injury, of course. If you're in a car crash and your body's all mangled up, yeah, don't train, obviously. But if you smash a hammer against your thumb or you stub your big toe, that's not an excuse to stop training. And what I generally do and advise is target other body parts and set new goals to either bring up the body part that's not been affected by injury or use the time and new priority to enhance another area of your life. One of the reasons that I love the four quadrants so much is if, for example, you get a physical injury, and this has happened to me, you know, torn Achilles, I've had a couple of knee surgeries, and had I had the four quadrants to come back to, particularly when I used to play sport and play GEA, I wouldn't have got as disheartened when I got injured, because I would have been like, okay, yeah, I can't hit the gym as often as I want to now, or I can't train as often as I want to, but I can spend more time with my loved ones. I can spend more time reading. I can spend more time creating content to help and serve more people with my business. I would have reframed it to enhance another area of my life and actually try to see the silver lining in the cloud. But when it comes to just pure training, you can train other body parts. So if you go back on my Instagram from probably about 2 years ago, I got kicked in a hand. I was playing a game, playing a training session. I got kicked in a hand, nearly broke my hand, and I couldn't lift or squeeze or hold any weight for about 6 weeks. And I trained all legs. I did all lower body. So I broke my workouts into hamstrings. I broke it into quads. I broke it into glutes. I did a lot of core work. And I documented that. I put it on my Instagram stories to show how you can train around an injury. So for example, if you get injured in your upper body, you can still train lower body. If you get injured in your lower body, you can still train upper body. And it's not a case of getting disheartened, because as I said earlier, what you focus on is what's going to expand. So if you focus on the woes me of, oh, I'm injured, fuck, I can't train the way I want to train, that's what's going to expand, and you're going to get annoyed and you're going to get just frustrated at not being able to train the way you want to train. So the first thing I would do is set new goals and use it as a chance to bring up other body parts. So for example, when I came back from the Arctic, I couldn't run. You know, my Achilles was torn. I wasn't able to run. And even though I don't enjoy running, it does lend to the ambition of the endurance events that I've set for myself. So it's quite an important part of my training that I'm able to get those miles in. But I use it as a chance to bring up things like, okay, I'll train HIIT workouts in my upper body. I was like, that'll be a completely fresh angle that I haven't trained before. So I did a lot of battle ropes. I did a lot of variations of kettlebell swings in positions that didn't hurt my Achilles. I did lots of variations of spider push-ups and variations of push-ups that I could elevate my heart rate. I changed the focus of my training so that I didn't lose the positive impact I get and the mental release I get from training, and I was still able to do things that would keep my heart elevated, so that as when I do go back running, I won't have lost a lot of that aerobic fitness, because you're just conditioning your body in a different capacity. You're doing more aerobic work in a high intensity level than long distance endurance, but there's going to be crossover in that. And keeping that in my mind allowed me to not get disheartened at the fact that my Achilles was torn and I wasn't able to run, even though I've got Ironman coming up in a few months. So when you have a long-term injury or a short-term injury, change the focus, change the goal, set new goals, and then target other body parts and work around your training. If you're unsure, that's a perfect time to go working with a coach, particularly someone in your gym or someone online that is very schooled up in different training techniques. Because if there's only a few movement patterns you can do, you can design a training program around it. If you've broken your leg, I remember when I got my first knee dislocation, it was actually my second knee dislocation, I remember being in the gym and just doing like 10 by 10 German volume training on a bench press. And I had a big massive cast on my leg and I was just doing bench press movements, and I was able to change the training stimulus and change the training parameters I was doing around the body parts that weren't injured, and as a result I got stronger in my upper body as my knee started to rehab. So change the focus, change the goal, set new goals, and then focus on the body parts that you can train, because what you focus on is what's going to expand. If I take fat-burning supplements, green tea, caffeine, L-carnitine, etc., well, I have to take them forever to keep the fat off. So green tea extract, caffeine, L-carnitine, tartrate, they're three fat-burning supplements I recommended in my first book, The Fitness Mindset. They're my personal favorites for not necessarily long-term use, but for use that won't have a negative impact and rebound back, like some over-the-counter fat burners that are largely dosed with ingredients with, say, appetite suppressants, so that when you go off them, your appetite increases, and then it makes it very difficult to maintain the weight or fat that you've lost. It makes it very difficult to maintain that body composition. So they're the ones that I normally recommend, because that really doesn't happen in the most case. However, when it comes to looking at supplements, and I understand where this misconception comes from, because when you think fat-burning supplements, you think that it's the supplements that get the body fat down or get your weight loss or get you to lose weight, when the truth is that's not what happens. They're supplements and they're definitely supporting you in if you have all your base for your nutrition covered, you're in a calorie deficit, you're utilizing your nutritional protocol to make sure that you have enough energy so that you can train and actually, you know, increase the amount of fat you're losing from your body. But the supplements are just an aid to help get you there faster. However, that's not the way I would look at supplements. I would look at supplements based around reversing them off whatever your goal is at the time. And supplements will change when your goal changes. And if fat loss is your primary goal, then it makes sense to use green tea extract, to use caffeine, to use L-carnitine tartrate. It can further enhance fat loss over a shorter period of time. But if your goal never changes from fat loss, there's normally a fundamental issue with your nutrition. So if you're constantly, and you've been the last 6 months, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years training, and fat loss is always your goal, there's something wrong with your nutrition, because your goal should change. Because if you're not reducing body fat and you're constantly taking the supplements, you're eating what you think is food that's helping you lose weight, and your goal never changes from fat loss, there's either something fundamentally wrong with your nutrition. You're not in a calorie deficit. You're not eating foods that are supporting or enhancing whatever it is you're trying to achieve. Or there's something wrong with your mindset, and that's what needs work. So it really depends on the person and identifying what the problem is. Because if you're listening to this and you've had fat loss as your goal for the last 2 years, your nutrition is off. Or you need to work on your mindset to why that goal hasn't changed in 2 years. Because if you have been reducing body fat and you're actually relatively lean right now, but you can still see the little bit of body fat on your triceps or the back of your arms, or you can still see the little bit of body fat on, you know, your abs or on the back of your lower back, that can sometimes be a rewiring of a mindset that you need. You know, we're hardwired and conditioned to focus on the negative things in our life. That's literally how we've evolved evolutionary psychology over years. Like, to see the negative traits in an environment kept you alive thousands of years ago. If you heard rustling in the bushes and you thought it was a saber-toothed tiger, you ran away. That kept you alive thousands of years ago. You had to focus on potential negative things in your environment, because otherwise you'd be eaten by something higher on the food chain. That's hardwired in your DNA, and that's hardwired in your consciousness now. So that's why when you look in a mirror and you're in really good shape and you're really happy with the way you look, but all you can see is the part of your body that you're unhappy with, that's the negative bias kicking in. That's hardwired in evolutionary psychology, and is hardwired in everybody that's listening to this. Your ancestors had that, and it kept them alive thousands of years ago, and we're byproducts of what kept them alive. Right now in 2019, that just makes you fucking miserable, but it did keep people alive thousands of years ago in the savannah. So it's worth noting that, because if you had fat loss as your goal for the last 2 years or 3 years or longer in some cases, it may be your mindset that you need to work on. So that's a case of, you know, building up your self-worth in other areas of your life, setting new goals so that you focus on other things, so that all your self-worth isn't attached to your body image and how much body fat you have in a particular area. It's rewiring your mindset to a degree. Alternatively, if it's you actually genuinely haven't lost body fat and you haven't lost weight, it's your nutrition. So in most cases, it's one of the two things. But what I would say with fat burning supplements, the exact same as I would say with muscle building supplements, is take them while that's the primary goal. When the goal changes, your supplements change or your food choice changes. It's the same with your nutrition. If you're in a calorie deficit because fat loss is your goal, if your goal changes to toning up or building muscle, that's going to increase. Those calories are going to increase because the goal has now changed. Always reverse engineer whatever the end goal is: losing body fat, toning up, improving performance, building muscle, having more energy. Whatever your end goal is, your supplements, your nutrition, and your training need to reverse engineer that. And once you know what the end goal is, one of the reasons I'm so big on goal setting is because you can't hit a target you can't see. But once you know that I want to keep body fat off, or I want to lose body fat and get it to a certain level, you make sure your training, your nutrition, and your supplements all reflect that, and they're all mapping towards that end ambition. As long as your actions and what you're doing every day are mapping to that end ambition, you're going to end up getting to your goal just by default of doing the right things every day. So that's what I would do with fat burning supplements. It's what I would do with muscle building supplements. And I would look and ask the question, is it a nutrition issue or is it a mindset issue that you need to work on? Because you can work on either. You can work with a coach on either. You can read the books on either. You can listen to the podcast on either. And you can improve whatever area you need to in terms of your knowledge gaps on nutrition or your mindset to improve the quality of your life so that you can continuously either lose body fat or change the way you're seeing it so you're not just always focusing on the negative aspect of the body that part that you're looking at that seems to be holding more body fat than you'd like. Okay, so a bit of a range of questions today. I think I'm going to leave it on there for now. My caffeine is starting to wear off and I can feel my focus coming back. So I think I'm going to go back and start trying to edit the book now. So hopefully you enjoyed this one. This was a little bit of an impromptu Q&A. I hadn't planned on doing it, but I also couldn't get my mind to focus properly. So this was kind of my selfish way of like getting all my energy out. So hopefully you enjoyed it. As I said, the questions came in from my Instagram. Be sure to stay tuned to my Instagram stories. If you have any questions at any stage, that is the place to send them in. The 10 question Q&A on a Monday to Friday. So I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, hit me up, tag it on your Instagram stories. Be sure to tag me, Brian_Keen_fitness. Hit me up on DM. Let me know what you thought. Thanks for listening. Catch you all real soon.